You've been accumulating probably more frequent flyer miles than anybody in the company over the last, it seems like, 3 months.
It feels that way. I think there's a couple other people on the OpenXML campaign who are logging quite a few as well. On the developer workshops, I counted it up since February. I think I've been on the road 63 nights. So that's pretty much been all out of the country.
Have you counted up your air miles?
No, in fact, it's funny. I have a to-do item on my list for next week is to do an audit and figure out where I'm at.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty well distributed amongst a bunch of different plans because it's kind of hard to stick to one airline if you're changing your flights at the last minute and things like that.
It's been multiple trips, right? Like three different long trips, right?
Three long ones and then a couple of one-offs. Let's see if I just kind of take them in order where we've done these workshops. Did one in Delhi, then Sydney, then Czech Republic, Belgium, Slovenia, Munich, then the Ukraine, Kiev, then Beijing, then did the South America tour, did Sao Paulo, Santiago, Bogota, Mexico City, then did Kenya and South Africa, and then back to India. So
that's just an astonishing amount of traveling to be doing in a few months. It must just be bewildering in many ways.
It is, and it's funny. At the beginning of it, it seemed so exciting to go all these places, and now I'm so glad July, as far as I know, July's almost over, and I will not set foot on an airplane in July, and I think most of August as well. So,
good for you. So there's almost too much there to try to condense, but I suppose it would be interesting to just ask you to reflect on what some of the highlights were and what some of the interesting stories that came out of these different visits.
Maybe one way to look at it is the people I've been talking to are, in general, two camps, ISV developers or some of the standards body people, and not really the executive body kind of people, but more the technical committee developer types.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the developers, maybe just kind of broad general trends, I find that in North America and Europe, it seems there's a lot of talk about the ISO process and some of the, issues there that people are debating back and forth. There's also a lot of talk about ODF and kind of comparisons there.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of the other places, say in India, and in particular in Africa, South America, there's more of kind of a pragmatic, they just want to know how to build things, how to get things done, and they seem to not be so involved in the current debate around the ISO process.
So in general, how far along are these folks on sort of the XML awareness curve relative to, your experience with developers in North America?
I think it is true that North America, at least the workshops we've done here, we see people who are more involved in XML technologies in general.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are a lot of exceptions to that. It's kind of hard to generalize. Some places, for example, in Kenya, in Nairobi, I was just really impressed with the caliber of the people at the workshop there, and both their knowledge of the development tools they're using and also XML in general and some of their creative ideas. I've heard people liken Kenya to India 10 years ago, a country where sharp developers, they speak good English so they can efficiently do business with North America and so on, and kind of just getting started there, a lot of the software industry in Nairobi. So that was pretty cool to see.
Were any of the groups that you visited with keen on internationalization and non-English language features?
Oh, yeah. There's some things. In fact, people asked questions in areas that I wasn't aware of, both in the spec, in OpenXML, and also in Office. Some people would ask me questions about localization issues in Office that had never occurred to me. In Beijing, in particular,
mm-hmm.
There's a team there at Beihang University. They're working on the UOF OpenXML translator. UOF is the Chinese government's kind of document format similar to OpenXML and ODF.
Yeah.
So those people working on that project had some very specific and fairly complicated questions about localization and dealing with Chinese character set and bidirectional text and some other things. As far as just language in general, like I didn't know. Here's a great example of something you wouldn't really think about if you're an English-speaking person playing with the XML formats. There are things like the formulas, say, in Spreadsheet ML that are stored in the XML markup as English words, like the word sum, S-U-M.
Hmm.
But if you have the Spanish language localization for Office and for Windows, then now you have, when you open that spreadsheet, you see SUMA in the spreadsheet, S-U-M-A, the Spanish word. Right. But what's actually stored in the markup is the English word. And, you know, there was kind of an ill-fated effort back in, I think, the late 90s to make VBA actually use the different translations internally. And I think it's easier on everyone if we just stick to the English version internally and make that a UI issue. But, mm-hmm. but those are the kinds of things I had never really thought of before I went to all these places. And it would come up. And some of these people, of course, they deal with that every day, so they know those issues very well.
What other kinds of things came up that you hadn't anticipated?
There are some applications that I had never really thought of. Like, here's an example in Slovenia. I talked to some guys who are doing an application where they do reports. It's kind of their particular application. It's hauling of hazardous waste. So there's a bunch of government requirements about documenting what was hauled where, so that 100 years from now we don't wonder how that nuclear sludge showed up in the landfill or something.
Mm-hmm.
So because of those requirements, they have a lot of reports that the system generates, and they have customers who wanted to be able to customize the look and feel of those reports, and they were toying with the idea of maybe doing some kind of a customized report generator that would let them tweak some things, and came up with the idea of why not just write this stuff into just to have XML parts that can be plugged into a template document,
mm-hmm.
give the customer a template document, and then if the customer wants to customize the report, they can just open that docx in, say, Word 2007 and do whatever they'd like, you know, with fonts and formatting, and add their, you know, logo or other things, and that XML part, their code just kind of injects that XML part into the document, and that's your customized report writer.
Well, that's a kind of a nice example of the whole general theme of the ability to incorporate structured data into documents.
Yes, yes.
In fact, that was one of the things I was curious about, is the extent to which that way of doing things is catching on. And so that sounds like that's one good example. You know, did you run into some others as well?
In Colombia, there's a local RD there who attended our workshop, and he had put together an interesting application, kind of a proof of concept, but he had some ideas of where they were going to go with this. Silverlight, at the time I was doing that tour in South America, Silverlight had just been announced. And he put together a little app that takes PPTX and basically turns it into a Silverlight app. So it takes the text out of the text boxes and so on, and positions them and sizes them on the screen so that it's kind of like a web browser for viewing PowerPoint presentations. It's one way to look at that, but using Silverlight, and also, that, of course, using the OpenXML that he reads to translate into it.
What kind of questions about interop did you get, and what kinds of interop scenarios did these folks present to you as you talked to them?
The most common interop scenario is just going back and forth to non-Microsoft platforms, and in particular Java developers.
Right.
If you look at who attended the workshops, primarily .NET developers, of course, because these were Microsoft events, and those are the people who would kind of know about them and be in the loop to have heard about them.
Mm-hmm.
But we also had, in some locations, some Java developers. I don't think we ever had a workshop where it was mostly Java devs, but sometimes there'd be a handful of them. And so they'd have kind of interesting perspective, you know, because they're not using any of our tools to get the job done. There's that OpenXML4J open source API Julien Chablais and others are doing over in France.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are looking at that. Some people are looking at things they're doing on their own. I think that API, it's come a long way, and I think that's kind of going to be the tool of choice for Java developers, for a lot of them going forward.
What was the basic format in terms of, so you had sort of obviously a standard presentation that you tweaked a little bit here and there?
Well, it's a two-day workshop. Actually, we did, at times, we did it one day, at times 3 day, kind of varied it, but the default delivery is two-day workshop with about a dozen presentations, roughly an hour, a little less, half hour to an hour, depending, and then after each presentation, there's a hands-on lab where everybody can go through and do something based on what they've just learned about, and we take them through the architecture, the formats up front, and then go through the three main document types, go through word processing ML, then spreadsheet ML, then presentation ML, and we have, for the labs, we have the .NET versions, and then we also have Java versions of the labs that Rick Jelliffe in Sydney down there with Alette Software. He developed for us, or his team developed for us, Java variations so that if a Java developer's in the workshop, they don't have to sit and twiddle their thumbs while everyone's doing the .NET lab. We varied the delivery. I said, you know, sometimes one day, sometimes 3 days. For some events, they felt a one-day event was best. That was kind of all they could fit in or all they could get commitment from people to attend. So in those cases, we'd leave out the labs and just give them the labs as a takeaway item. Three-day workshop, we had time to really stretch things out and kind of have more interactive sort of approach where we'd just do Q&A and go through samples together and those sorts of things. I was impressed with there was more awareness amongst the developers than I might have at first expected. You know, a year ago, say, when we were doing OpenXML development sorts of presentations or workshops, you'd have people who, you tell them it's a zip file with XML parts, and they go, wow, it's just a zip file? That's amazing. And now most everybody seems to understand the basic concepts and the structure, and some of them had actually played with things quite a bit of depth. We've had we've just had some people who have taught me things about little subtleties of the format or things you can or can't do or how things work that that we hadn't really thought about just because there's so much there, and if somebody has a particular interest in a particular area, they might dig really deep into that. And so some of these people have already written quite a bit of code and played around with things and have very specific questions, but most of them are just looking for how to get started, what are the tools. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I should mention regarding these workshops, all the content for the workshops we're going to put on OpenXML Developer in August and make it all publicly available, the presentations, the hands-on labs, all the source code and everything, and also a set of videos that we recorded in the final workshop. I was kind of joking that I did 15 dry runs to get ready, and then once I had the content down, we recorded one.
Yeah.
So, you know, that worked out well that it was the last one we recorded, and that was in San Francisco in June.
It would be interesting if there were a way to also capture some of the stuff that those folks came up with that was new to you and add that to the package.
Yeah, and on that, I think we will be, I have several people who I talked to about things they were doing and said, hey, would you be willing to write an article for OpenXML Developer? So I've got a list of those that over the next few weeks we should be able to get posted there, just things people were working on, you know, asking them to come up with kind of a generic bit of code. And in some cases, they don't really want to take the time or perhaps don't quite feel comfortable writing it up. So what I've told people is, hey, get me some code that does something useful, and I'll write up a little article around it or whatever, and let's get it up on OpenXML Developer and, you know, kind of give you name credit for what you've been working on and share it with the community. So.
Sounds good. I can't let you go without one great travel story.
One that comes to mind because Sandra Marine, the developer evangelist in Bogota, was kind of teasing about it this week while here for Tech Ready, is when we were in Bogota, you know, Bogota has a bit of a crime problem. And it's you get these travel advisories when you go to the various cities, and the one from Bogota, I saved a copy of the email because it's quite different from the others I've received. You know, it says, I don't know, foreign business persons traveling in Bogota should be careful. Kidnappings are common, you know, these sorts of warnings. So our training was at a facility a few miles from the Microsoft office, and the way it worked is each morning we'd get together with all the developers who were in town, and we were all at hotels downtown, so we had a bus that would come around, pick us all up, and then drive us all to this workshop where we'd do our workshop all day, and then the bus would bring us back. Well, the second morning of that workshop, the bus got in a traffic accident. And actually, I had a great bird's-eye view of it. The car hit us right underneath my window of the bus. So anyways, we had a traffic accident, and, you know, it's rush hour, it's chaos, so cars are quickly piling up all over the place. And then the police come out, and they have to measure everything three times and write lots of things down. And you know, it's just kind of a typical traffic accident mess. But then they had all of us standing there in a street corner in Bogota and trying to figure out how to get us to the workshop. So we were flagging down taxis, and I hopped in a taxi, and turns out after we had driven a little way in the taxi, realized that nobody knew where we were going or what the address of the location we're going to. So we're just in a taxi, and I don't speak Spanish, so I couldn't really coordinate this very well. So we wound up turning the taxi around and getting back to where the accident was, and there were still a couple people there, including the poor bus driver who was still talking to the police. and he managed to explain where to go. But by the time we got to the workshop, they were quite nervous about what happened to our two American trainers. They've disappeared into the city in a taxi. So that was kind of fun.
Well, if that was the worst thing that happened, then that's not too bad. So, Doug, I hope that you will be enjoying your couple of months of not having to get onto an airplane. I think you've earned it.
John, thanks very much. I'm really looking forward to a summer at home.
Okay, take care, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.